They viewed me as a nothing and that I was going to amount to nothing. And I had a great idea and plan. And
look at you now.
Hello, all, and welcome to Marsha, 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 the podcast. I'm your host, Marsha Molinari. And you are here listening to the podcast that brings true and heartfelt human connection. I believe if you don't know about it, you can't care about it. And that's why we're here today. Yeah. Hey everyone, welcome back to Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Today I have a very, very special guest and someone very close to my heart, my business partner, my life partner, and H-Wood Group founder, John Terzian.
Thank you very much, Marsha.
I wish we had a crowd. I want claps. Yay!
Don't you have a button yet or no?
I should.
You need an applause button.
Yeah, we'll get that
and
together.
And a booing one.
Michaela.
Yeah, and a booing one.
I wanted you here today because I wanted to talk about the evolution of H-Wood.
Okay.
And, you know, because there's so many stories we talk about all the time that people don't see. They see the nightclub, they see the celebrity, and a lot of people are like, wow, you guys are just a hit. You know, like, how did you do it? And are you, everything you do is a hit. And I know the backstories behind everything that we do, and it's the process of getting there. You know, it's like,
It's a journey.
It's a journey. And well, let's talk about when we first met.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I think that was...
A little Sex is on Fire.
Yeah. We did. We met at a Kings of Leon Grammy party.
There you go. Good little nod to Kings of Leon.
And that was Teddy's, right? Back in the day?
Yeah, it was the after party was at Teddy's.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, I was just coming off of being Well, I still was. I was a promoter, essentially. I was out of law school. I had my promotion company, and I was building what... it's really crazy looking back on it, because I think it was way ahead of its time, because I was building, essentially, Delilah then.
Yeah.
And the idea was, you know, to have this amazing restaurant, club, lounge, where people would come together.
So this was, like, kind of all formed already, in your head.
That was the vision.
Yeah.
And we had I had gotten, because I had no real credibility or money or anything, I took this horrible deal where we got an old two-story Burger King at the side of Hollywood and Highland.
Yeah, that was originally Stork, right?
So the vision, which is when I met you and we talked about, hey, you have this vibe, you have this thing, you have this great marketing. I can just tell, like, the minute I think we met was when we started. And I was like, just come see what we're building and doing. And that was Stork. And the Stork name came from, you know, my whole background was art and studying, like, old things. And Stork was one of the most famous supper clubs.
In New York, right?
In New York, yeah.
I remember you telling me about it, and I thought it was just so fantastical.
Yeah.
And something that we hadn't had in L.A.
Yeah.
And just such a great vision that you had then. You know, I actually do find it interesting how we found each other, but how you kind of had this, like, intuition. Yep. And you've done this with a number of people where you know, kind of groomed them in a sense that you see something special. And yep. I always felt special by being seen by you. And
I appreciate that.
No, that's no, true. Truly. And... You know, when we first got started and you told me about this idea and you had me come by Stork, and it was beautiful. You know, it was a Burger King, but you could not tell.
Right.
Like, it was so well done. I remember there was something to do with the Andy Warhol factory windows.
Yeah,
really cool things.
We shipped in Warhol's original windows from his factory, the actual factory.
Yeah.
So... A lot of those real amazing details. Also, maybe why it was a colossal failure, but discuss that.
No doubt, right? Well, you know,
but so, yeah, it was definitely ahead of us. You had to tell a poem to get in the door, you know. Yeah. And really, what's crazy, I was thinking back on it the other day, is you were actually the first person technically with me in H-Wood. Brian and I grew up together. College together. He actually had his massive promotion company and was he was like one of the investors in Stork.
Oh, I didn't know that actually.
And then since I basically am a lunatic with creative and art, and I realized that I'm not a good business person. And I was like, I got to bring someone. I was like, Brian bought a house in Hollywood Hills. Like, what the hell? So all around that same time, then I bring, you know, that's when I brought you in. I convinced Brian around the same time, like let's go own stuff, partner,
yeah,
versus you doing your own. And that's really where we, you know, went about it. And then we had to close store because we didn't know what we were doing and it was a mess. Close it for 3 months. That's when we brought in Amanda Demme.
Yeah.
And she actually named Hwood. So I got to give her that credit. And then Hwood took shape. And then really in my, what I really give credit to was we had this blank broom closet, essentially. Like, honestly, it was a storage closet. And thanks to you and combined all of our efforts, but, you know, we got known at Hwood for all these great talent coming through and wanting privacy. And
the bell tower.
So we turned that little room into the tea room.
Yeah.
And all like right. That to me, even though that was like a 1,000-square-foot place, we used all of like my grandma's art and we had no money. So like all the furniture, all like the teacups and all that stuff. And the idea was like,
I remember I brought pictures over to like kind of like put on the like men's bathroom, women's bathroom. I had these beautiful like Warhol sketches that we blew up and framed.
Yeah, and I think what was cool about it was we unintentionally stumbled upon keeping people super discreet. Mm-hmm. Even the name, the Tea Room, people felt good saying they're going to the Tea Room and they weren't like going to some seedy nightclub, even though it was a full blown mini nightclub.
Oh, it
was. Some of the best nights in the history to this day, you know, happened in there.
Oh, all my friends still talk about it. They're like, it'll never be the way it was because it was so special. But before that, I kind of want to get into like the roads that lead us to where we are. You were in law school.
I was in law school.
And you studied art. But I remember you telling me this story of doing parties on the Queen Mary.
Yeah, I got banned from the Queen Mary. That's a fun fact.
So like it was in the beginning when you started law school and you're in art, did you think nightlife, nightclubs, or did that come after? Because you also did day-to-day management for DJ AM, right?
I never thought I was going to get into nightlife. To this day, I don't view myself in nightlife.
I view myself as
like a creator, an entrepreneur, even though, but I definitely never, I don't think any kid at that time thought they could be in nightlife. When we were growing up, I don't think this industry existed.
No, you could, it wasn't like that. Yeah.
You could have a hotel, you could have like a restaurant. So even to this day, not to digress, but I do try to like shed light to kids. Like there's every avenue now.
Right.
And they're like, this industry in itself is an incredible one. And there's so many aspects to it. It's not cookie cutter, which is appealing to like a kid like me that didn't, you know, all I knew in my life. And the only reason I went to law school, great parents, but they just expected only lawyers. And, you know, that's the only thing we all knew.
Right.
And it just wasn't me. I'd be, you know, I couldn't pass the bar. I think I would be the worst lawyer in the history of law if I actually became that. So in my mind, this is my outlet and what I'm doing of, you know, art and creativity and stuff. And so, I think that's kind of what always, like, I always try to stay true to that. Even to this day, when we have all these places and stuff, I have to like remember why we, you know, where we all came from, how we got here. So
that's amazing. I don't think you knew this about me, but I actually worked in a law office when I was in high school. My mom's a paralegal and she wanted me to be a lawyer. And when I worked in the law office, I just, the specific law office I worked for, I just thought everyone was so miserable.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see myself
doing
that for my life.
Yeah.
And so then I moved to LA for film school and then eventually, you know, Katy Perry happened.
Who's
one of my best friends and essentially how we met.
Yeah. Technically,
how we met and
introduced us.
Yeah. And getting a start with her. And, you know, at the time, I had never thought about being in the nightlife industry. And I think when we met, I wasn't even going out very much at the time.
Right.
But you kept me next to you for everything. And I learned so much from you and I'm continuing to learn from you. And, but through that, we've met like super interesting people. How we got really introduced was through a mutual friend who actually turned out to be a con artist.
Full con artist.
And which we'll later learn in our journey that we would meet tons of them.
Tons of con artists. They're probably all listening.
To this day.
I blame Marsha if anyone's listening.
Right.
go after Marsha.
No, please don't stay away.
But yes, they are. We definitely learned that people are crazy.
Right. I mean, even in the beginning of then having H-Wood, then having Tea Room. I mean, now looking back at it, we really also were unafraid of trying things because we also had H-Wood Beauty.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fantastic. We had H-Wood Teas.
Yeah.
And so this kind of all grew from that. Just allowing a creative space is what you've always allowed. And, you know, and sometimes those things didn't work out, but we gave it a really good go. I mean, H-Wood Beauty was like fantastic and ahead of its time because no one was doing makeup.
Even though most things won't work out, there's always some learning lesson from it. And to me, it's just brand building is paramount to anything. And I think we were just doing that naturally. And then over time we realized, hey, we actually can build a brand.
Yeah.
And that's really what we've been all focused on, you know? But it's you know, every step of the way, it's like one step forward and seven steps back. And I think that's what people don't realize, you know?
I mean, I remember even during H-Wood when we were doing the restaurant side, we had so much, you know, difficulties like paying employees because, you know, it's not what everyone sees. They're not like you have a restaurant, you're instantly rich, right?
It's quite the opposite. Like
other people were getting things, but like, you know, we were struggling.
Oh, yeah.
And we were struggling to get employees paid and everything was kind of like that for a minute. And
for a while
actually. But we stuck through it. And I saw something also in you that I knew that you weren't going to give up, and it lit a fire in me to like also not give up.
Yeah.
And you know, when you pick a partner in any sense of the way and you see these kind of like, personality traits that you have, I just knew I had to stick by your side. And even through like H-Wood, the original H-Wood, mm-hmm. we had to close down. I know that was really hard for the both of us. But let's get into also, you know, the troubles there. Like we had, you know, LAPD coming in every single day. I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, that the closing of H-Wood itself, the H-Wood venue.
But it was a number of things. It was neighbors and all the things.
Well, but that could be exemplary of, like, I think how I have been in business, personal and business, but we're talking business now, and I think everyone close to us is the same, like, whether, you know, all of us, you know, team, Brian and Tony and Adam and you and you know, the whole team, Parker, everybody, everyone that's, like, inner circle, everyone's different opinions, but the one underlying thing I can think we all say is everyone's in for the long game and mm-hmm. everyone is above board and is reputation and relationships first. And so, you know, with the H-Wood closing, it was really, really crazy looking back on it because really what happened is while we didn't know what we were not good, we were so young, we didn't know really, we weren't great operators, we didn't know exactly all of that. We were incredible with bringing
the crowd in. Yeah.
And so that's something that people, it's usually the opposite. Usually people, so we had crazy crowds. We were so young. I was a lot more brash when I was younger and didn't know, you know, exactly how to peacemake and deal with cops and neighbors and stuff. And so when they would come, it's like, we're not doing anything wrong. So what that there's noise. And, you know, unfortunately we had corrupt cops. And so they would come arrest me, drive me around, drop me off an hour away in the middle of whatever. And really what they wanted were payoffs.
Yeah, payoffs.
They would ask me several times. And I know so many other owners and they're like, why are you not paying them? We're paying them $5,000 a week. And I'm like, you're paying the cops? Like, it's something, like, I won't sleep at night. And so—
Yeah, I remember you said that to me. You go, I'd rather shut down than give them a dime. And I just got the chills because I was like, maybe just one dime. Maybe just give him one dime.
I mean, it was scary. Brian actually went to jail. They took him in for no reason. Couldn't charge him with anything.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, it's funny. Years later, I was on the police board or whatever, and now I'm on, like, all of these boards and stuff. But years later, the two cops that did all that to us were complete. It's funny. They weren't fired. They were demoted. They were caught for taking bribes. You basically can't get fired from the police force. It's pretty crazy. And it's unfortunate because we've had some absolutely amazing cops and like LAP and you get these bad ones. So it was really hard with the H-Wood closing because, you know, I was staying true to being above board. I was staying true and I'll never waver. It's probably why we've been in this lot longer than most. We have not cut corners.
Definitely.
I never will. I don't think any of us ever will, which is probably why we're all so tight and why we have attract good people with us. But with that, it was really disheartening. And when we lost that, it was almost like a domino effect because we had the tea room, which had to close that. And then it pulled down because of liquor license. We had opened Las Palmas,
which
is the other nightclub, and that had to close. So then all of a sudden, all this work, all this money, I personally had to move home with my parents. We didn't have $1. Really didn't know what to do.
And I remember at the time was the exact same time I had that Paris group, the marketing and branding firm. I remember them bringing them to Tea Room. And then I told you, I think like the next day or maybe the following weekend, I was like, it's so strange. They offered me a job and you're like, take it. And I was like, wait, no, I'm here. And you're like, no, we're sinking. Take it. And I was like, no, well, we'll sink together. And you're like, just go to Paris.
Let me sink.
Yeah, just go to Paris and we're going to start something up eventually. Yeah. And, you know,
I had to convince Brian. He was like, I'm going to business school. You're crazy.
To
like,
keep
I had to
going.
Convince all of you guys. Yeah.
Because it was a lot against us at once.
A lot against us.
And like you said, for us to be above board and still have people against us, and you're like, wait, I'm doing everything right, but it's not working, and it's dark, and, you know, most people would just stop completely.
Yeah. To this day, it's why I'm so vocal. Again, I can't stand the politics game, but, you know, I went in as a business owner and, you know, went and met with, at the time, Garcetti.
Yeah.
He promised helping us. He's like, you know, you guys have thrown my dinners, whatever. In the courtroom with the five police there, he walked in and said, no, they're awful. They need to be closed. Completely lied to us. And so it's like, you know.
You're just like, what?
I'm just like, you know,
no
a
hope.
Kid that, yeah, no hope. So, you know, and we lost. I had raised for the original H-Wood a couple $1 million, my best friend's money. You know, I did not come from money like that. My grandparents, when they passed, they left the kids, they left our grandsons, everyone divvied up 100 or 50 grand, whatever it might be. All of that was supposed to go into savings. I lied and put it all into this. And, you know, so I had like just everything on me.
Yeah.
And, but I think you don't know at the time, but I think I had to be, I think you have to have all of those hits and really learn like in a real way.
Totally.
Because like, I really will never forget my parents asking me, what are you going to do now? And I'm like, what do you mean what I'm going to do now? I'm going to find another thing to do to open. And they're like, you can't be serious. You're not going to keep in this. And I'm like, of course I am. I'm not doing anything else. You know, there was really no other like wavering for me.
Right.
And so I think that's one big thing. A, because it's my love.
Yeah.
So you can't really stop money. There's no amount of money in the world that's going to change. It's going to like affect something when you love something.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. So then you move in with your parents. Yeah. I leave to Paris. But, you know, in a sense, we kept in close contact. We were always, there was always something to do. Yeah. We did.
I think that's when I worked harder. It was almost like COVID. We went crazy with, you know, you brought in a big thing with Katie with a opening in Vegas.
Yeah, we did like, but that was a deal that we did together. And, and that was something that that was such a blessing at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And
we got an overall deal with the Beverly nightclub, which we later ended up buying it. But
yeah. And which is so funny because, yeah, we started off doing nights there because there was towards their end.
Yes.
And then for us to get that.
Yes.
And this place, actually, Bootsy Bellows, was similar, right?
Came later. You know, because of... But like every year there was some great time and then a setback.
Yeah.
You know, like when we were doing the Beverly, we had this promotion. It was really disheartening. We had come from owning three places. We're back to being essentially promoters.
Right.
I mean, I don't want
to. We were working.
We were working.
Yeah.
You know, came up with this incredible idea to open this first ever like club lounge on the beach at the Miramar Hotel.
Right.
Spent a year of time.
So many meetings. I remember this.
Money none of us had. You know, I think we borrowed like 20 grand to help get permits and designs done and, you know. And, you know, long story short, there is that hotel completely took the idea, cut us out, opened it on its own and did their own thing. And that was where a real turning point, because after everything I had been through and living at home with parents and all of us not making a dollar, you know, in my mind, I was like, I was college educated, law degree. I was maybe making $1,000 a week, maybe, because it just varied.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, what in the world? At that point, I was like, I'm just like rock bottom.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know. And so it was either you be rock bottom, you feel bad for yourself, you change careers.
Right.
I did the complete opposite.
You went full
where
force.
I was super crazy angry. I think I still stay this way as far as like, so I went full force and I'm like, I'm going to find a place, I don't care what it is, in Santa Monica and open against these, because I was super disheartened. It's to me, it's about the people just doing that, being above board.
Right. I mean, us coming together and all the people that you've found, you really do stick to a loyalty, you know, to people and let them know that they can grow. And
yeah,
you know, even if they have ideas, you're definitely like, well, that was your idea. And you
yep.
give credit where credit is due. And that didn't happen in this instant. They completely took it and...
They took it, lied about it. Then they had to, you know, they had to admit it, obviously. But, you know, they viewed me as a nothing and that I was going to amount to nothing. And I had a great idea and plan. And
look at you now.
What's crazy is it's a very successful place. So I find comfort in the fact that I knew what I was doing, or we all knew what we were doing. But that drove me to be like, we're going to go find. So, you know, I'll always credit, found this dilapidated bar. Literally, there were holes in the wall.
Oh, I remember when you showed me. It looked like a vampire den.
Yeah.
I was like, no, John. And you're like, oh, yeah. This is going to be good. And I was like,
yeah. I know.
And, you know, you always have, you actually do have this vision of places because, like, even now, Delilah's, you know, and I think I had my 30th birthday there. But even then, it was also like a dark vampire den. And now it's like this beautiful, bright. Place, magical place, and so is Shore Bar. You know, that vision was like, wow. Like, I remember walking through there, and it was just like, the walls are black.
Yeah,
it was just dark.
There's a hot dog roller, flies.
Oh, gross.
They. I'll never forget the dude. He didn't have anywhere to put when I was in there scouting the place. He didn't have anywhere to put a bottle, so he punched a hole in the wall and put the bottle. So I was like, oh. So I what happened is I convinced the guy, I staked out the place, convinced the guy that owned the place to shut it down and give us a shot to do it. We didn't have any money, so I convinced him to pay us to do it, the place. So he said, you have $100,000 total to redo the place, and that's it. You go $1 over, it's on you. And we would never be able to do.
At that point, it has to be ahead.
So yeah. We had this vengeance to really redo it. That's how I met John Sofio, the builder who's done all of our places. And he did it for free for us. I said, look, if you do this for free and it's a hit, I'll only use you. And so I've stayed true to that. You know, all these it's now 11 years, 12 years. But he, you know, came in there. We redid it, did this whole hybrid members only. It's our, you know, oldest place. It definitely like has my heart because in my opinion, it's probably what we should have done in the beginning. It's a small operation. We had a lot of knowledge on what went wrong with H-Wood, Tea Room, Stork, and what went right.
Yeah.
And then I was so vengeful against the hotel
guys that did it
that I literally think I would have done. Yeah, I literally would have done anything to make sure it's a success. And I think we all, you know, we all did it. We all came together. I think that's when we really all, you know, made our stride. And to me, that's the biggest turning point in like all of our lives, even though it was so long ago. But that was a big deal because not only do we learn how to operate, you know, basically got our names on the map, you know, kind of all of the above, we were able to get enough attention to go do more.
Right.
And that was where, you know, we came together with Arquette, who was just coming off of a bad situation with his former club. We all decided we were going to go make a new mark in nightlife in Hollywood together.
And that was originally going to be named, and it wasn't this spot, right?
It was no, it was going to be at the Hilton, and it was going to be called The Good Life.
I thought it was such a good name. I was like,
great
The
name.
Good Life. Yeah,
great
like
name.
Because we needed that in that moment.
Needed that.
And it was sort of like a fantasy kind of name.
Yeah.
And but then it didn't happen, right?
Didn't
happen. That venue and that name.
Didn't happen. The venue didn't want us. This age-old story of our lives. But it was okay. We you know, it's like I said, everything turned out for the better. You know, Brian was friends with the person that owned this club, Truesdale. And we had this vision, and we were able to, you know, we didn't know what it was going to be called, but the vision with what really was a combo, Arquette and ourselves, was experiential nightlife, where you have puppets and jugglers and acts going around and surprise performers and dinner theater and bottle service and like kind of all of the above.
So what was that like initially? Like, because, you know, David is an actor and a celebrity, so that's a strategic partnership. And what was that like when you first brought him in, and did he have all these ideas? Like, I want puppets and I want all the things.
100%, and that's him. But the most important thing to note about him, you and I both, always around, you know, some of our closest friends are, you know, big celebrities and all that. It's about, with David, he's like the best human, best person.
Best person.
And he fit right in with how we all are.
Totally.
And I knew that. So we were definitely friends about that. And I think that's where the key was, he has the best ideas in that regard. One of the most creative people I've ever met. And the fact that he physically was actually behind it and there and wanted
he was
to be there.
Here every night.
Yeah. And so we didn't know we were going to name it. You know, we were, he and I went actually on a trip to Cabo. He was like, let's get away, whatever. I was actually dating my wife now. We first started dating then. And so brought her, we're all in Cabo, the three of us, and
Lonnie,
and he literally was like we were looking up names, and then he was like looking up like all these vaudeville acts, and he like stumbles across, he's like, my mom's name was Bootsy Bellows. She was like a pinup girl. And like, we're like researching, it was like the craziest thing of all
right.
time. And he was like, we need to name the place Bootsy Bellows. And I was like, might be the best idea I've heard.
Right.
So that's where Bootsy's came from.
I know. And I think it's so great because we have a story behind it. And I think, you know, when you told me that story, like that was his mom's pinup name. And then we got these old photos that we hung
crazy.
Up. I just felt such a special energy and I knew it was going to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you also still have a little PTSD from like all the other times we've opened up places or something didn't work. And I remember Bootsy Bellows, the opening night being just, I was terrified. I was shaking that whole night.
Yeah.
Just like, I hope someone comes.
I know. You know, I still have PTSD though.
I know, for everything.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever get over what's gone on.
Right.
So to this day, I every night we're open, forget new places. Every night we're open our places, I'm still concerned.
Well, no, and what people don't understand is that things that happen during the day to get to the dinner time.
Yes.
With food delivery, with, you know, things going awry, like ovens going out and all these kind of things. People don't see that and they just see a beautiful restaurant.
Yes.
Gorge food. But what gets you there? I mean, back to opening Bootsy's, I remember walking in, I think at 4 p.m. and none of the booths were in.
Yeah.
It hadn't been finished painting.
Yeah.
And I was like, are we going to be ready? And everyone was like, mm-hmm, we'll be ready. And I also had Katie's movie premiere that same night.
Yep.
So I didn't even bother asking her. And you were like, is she going to show? And I was like, she's got this big thing going on. And I remember leaving that premiere. And she was like, bye-bye. And I was like, there's no way she's going to come because, you know, she's got her own thing going on. And what ended up happening was she filled, I think it was Justin Bieber's bus.
Yep.
With Selena, Rob Pattinson, every celebrity that was at her movie premiere. Truck pulled up, big giant van pulls up. I'm like, where are we going to fit them? Because it was packed.
Right.
It was packed. But you know, it all worked out, and it was such a beautiful.
I'll always credit her for doing that, putting us on the map.
It was a big jump, deal. And you know, but she cares, and
yep.
and she knew that it was important, even without me having to tell her.
Yep.
And I thought that was so special, and introduced us to a lot of people that are family today.
Yep.
You know, that really support us along the way in anything that we do.
Yep.
You know, so we go right from Bootsy's, and Shore Bar is already open, and we also have now Nice Guy.
No, so
Nice Guy was first. Then we opened, right?
No. First was Shore Bar.
It's all blending in together.
No, then Bootsy Bellows.
Right. Shore Bar.
And then Bootsy's was such a hit that we needed one other nightclub, because the way you balance out and really control kind of like the week of like
right.
nights, because you could only be open at a nightclub successfully two nights a week,
yeah.
sometimes three. So we needed to balance that out. We wanted to stay in West Hollywood. Really, we weren't allowed to go back to Hollywood. So,
and that was something that you honestly said you never wanted to do because of the hardships that we had there, right?
Well, actually, the city
was like,
told
no.
us that you can't go come back.
Oh, no. You're like, well, how that really played out.
So they actually said you cannot come back to Hollywood. So that's why we were like, you know what? Then we'll go make West Hollywood cool.
Yeah.
You know, and so West Hollywood, really, why I'm so active with West Hollywood overall was they like truly embraced us.
Yeah.
They were like absolutely amazing. They were, you know, especially at the time, leaderships and stuff has changed, but they were truly amazing. And I don't think people realize how important it is to have those city relations, because
yeah.
you can't get anything done if you don't have that. So they embraced us. We were able to do it. So we're like, we're never leaving West Hollywood. Like, we're only staying in West Hollywood. And we kind of have stayed true to that in a lot of ways. We're
yeah.
basically only West Hollywood. But basically, we, you know, at the time we were like, you know, we need to control it. So we, the same person that we were close with that had Truesdale, he had Guys in Beverly.
Yeah.
And we were the promoters of Beverly. And we said, you know, what's perfect is we actually want to buy it from you. We're going to raise the money and do it. And, you know, I didn't even know how or what we were going to do to get it. I just knew we'd figure it out. And I knew it would be a hit. And so, you know, we went through that process, and we're raising the same amount of money. We were like, you know, there's a place available down the street. Do you remember that? Lolo's?
Yeah. It had all the olive trees inside,
yeah,
and like the mosaic.
It's now bar. It's now called Isabel.
It's okay.
A great space, Isabel. And we were like, you know, do we want this place or that place? We didn't fully know. We got into it with the owner, and we went way down the line with the owner, and we were kind of like off on the deal points, and we didn't know if we could do it. And the place that Guy had, which is Beverly, he was like so perfect about it. He was like, look, it's clean. Like, you guys can just do this deal like it is. So we very amicably told the other place we weren't going to do their place. And she sent this crazy email.
This is what I wanted to get to, because finding the name for Hooray Henry's.
She sent this crazy email that, you know, literally was like a 3-page email. And at the end, she was like, you guys are a bunch of Hooray Henry's. And I was like, the entire email, which just like blasted us. I literally wrote back. I was like, what's a Hooray Henry? So we looked it up, and it was just like a blowhard, like a drunken English party boy or something like that.
That is us.
And I was like, this is brilliant. So yeah. We named the club Hooray Henry's.
Yeah.
And so we had Hooray Henry's, Bootsy Bellows, and Shore Bar.
I was obsessed when we opened up Hooray Henry's, because I thought it was so cool. One, how the name came about. I thought that was so funny that you took that negative and was like, whoa, there, that's a good idea.
Yep.
And then we had that.
Done that a few times.
Yeah. Had that British influence, and we had dancers, and we had so many great events there. But then we have to change over to Henry's.
Yep.
And which is now Peppermint.
Yes.
I mean, I think it doesn't get any easier when we have to move on from a place, you know.
No, it's not easy. It's hard to not, you have to literally put your whole soul into a place, and then you have to somehow be unemotional about
put
something not working.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Definitely.
It's really hard. It's something that I have a hard time to this day doing, you know. But as we got bigger with those nightclubs, I realized actually there was a niche, there was a void in LA marketplace. I think what was key about us is always, and I still always want to do this, but recognize when there's voids.
Yeah.
Because I think that's when success can really happen. And we realized that, sure, there's great nightclubs, but people were, A, our close friends getting older, I guess, if you will. And then B, there was this need for this like elevated dining, like not just a restaurant, not just a nightclub. And that's where we set out to find a place where the original idea for, we didn't have a name for it, but for Nice Guy was just a tiny restaurant that was, you could only have, be on our like Rolodex list to come in. And it was supposed to be, you know, 20 types of pizzas and an amazing bar, and that was it. And when we got into it more and more, we realized actually we want to be a full-blown like restaurant yeah. group. Like that was really what our future should be, because we liked it and people, you know, and so.
And our friends liked it. I think when people ask, what do you attribute to success? I always say like, well, it's not that easy, but you know, what we did was cater to our friends and our friend group at the time.
Yes.
And we wanted to give them a comfortable space. And we thought about what makes them have a good time as well. And so once we stayed true to that, they jumped on and they stayed with us, right?
To me, the best DJs and the best performers in the world like cater to the crowd. And so I think I kind of liken that to how we are, where you like listen and watch what people want and you deliver that. Doesn't mean you sacrifice your artistic integrity, but it does mean you give people what they're looking for, you know? And so they were looking for this, you know? And when we were going to open it, we didn't have a name. Everyone was like, you guys are crazy in LA. You know, you no one does that. That's Europe. I think only Europe was really doing it. You can't have a place where you eat and stay and hang out. Like, that's literally what I was told. And, you know, Adam Corral came up with the, you know, he was like, he had this, vision or dream of like, have a place. Because the whole idea was around our friend group, like a mafia.
Mm-hmm.
He had this whole, that's where the nice guy name came from, was Adam saying that. And we were like, it's a cool name. And then around the same time, the investor that was supposed to put up the money backed out of the place. So we're like stuck with the place, but backed out. And he was like, you told me, it's like, you're never doing anything. You're too nice of a guy. Like, there's no way this is ever working. And so we named it Nice Guy, as in kind of a nod to like, A, you can get ahead and be nice, be good people.
Right.
And B, it was just, the whole place was supposed to be this like mafia friend, not real mafia, but like,
in a sense, a close knit group that protects each other.
And that's what we built there. And it changed the LA, Nice Guy definitely changed the LA kind of dining scene.
Definitely.
For good. There's no question about it. Also, I think that is what set off the actual formation of like Hwood Group as a hospitality group, because we're starting now to realize we're a well-rounded group. We have nightclubs, we can have restaurants, we can have, you know, who knows, a world or oyster. Our goal has always been our own hotels, you know, which we still don't have, you know.
Next,
exactly. So that's,
we have also Hwood Media.
Yeah, so that comes, but that's really, you know, to me, Nice Guy was pivotal with that.
Yeah. What I want to like touch base on again was how finding your group. And I always say that our group is like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
Like it can't be replicated, and I don't see it anywhere else, because, you know, when I first thought about a nightclub owner, nightlife, any of this, anyone, even restaurant owner, it kind of was like seedy a bit. Like, and the only people that I did know were like into drugs, you know, sleeping with all the waitresses and all these things. And that just never was us. And you know, we treat this as an actual love and a job.
Yep.
And so certain people will, you know, come to me and be like, I want to be an investor, I want to do this. And if I know enough about you, I'd be like, no, this will kill you.
Right.
You know, because in the wrong hands, it could be very dark.
Yes.
And also coming back to the group that, you know, I think we can say attribute you to curating, was like even finding Parker. Like, I always find that so interesting, you know, coming from One Oak, bringing them here and then letting them know that there is a space to grow. And that's been with all of us,
yeah.
You know, even from when you brought in Zach Bia and, you know, I've recently got hit up and someone was like, can we make them like Zach Bia? I go,
yeah.
First of all, you don't just make someone a Zach Bia. Zach really put in the work and I remember him.
Yeah.
He was with you everywhere.
24/7.
Wearing a tux, you know, really wanting to learn, really hungry. He wasn't just at the club. He was at the office as well.
Yep.
And I tell people, I'm like, if you're not willing to do all of the steps, then no, you can't just be
yeah.
a Bia.
Yeah.
you know, in a sense. And
Nice one.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice one.
But where do you think that comes from? You kind of like, you basically see talent and you know that it can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of trickles on down to everything mm-hmm. that you're a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think about that often or ever?
No, I actually don't think about it. So I appreciate you saying that. But I'll tell you why I don't think about it, but it's probably a good way of being it. Is to me, it's like me doing that makes all of us and ultimately me all keep rising and winning.
Totally.
And I think if more people had that mindset, they would do that.
And thrive.
I think inherently, you know, I've just been raised a certain way. I've never had an ego in any way.
No.
It's actually quite the opposite. So I think ego.
Only when you're told that you can't do something.
That's a vengeance.
And yeah, let's go.
That's exactly. So that's true. But no, it's kind of the opposite. Like nothing makes me more excited when someone with us gets like praise, attention, you know, whatever it might be. Some of my proudest moments are you getting attention, you doing this. I think you were born to do this, honestly. Thanks. And so to me, like that stuff is fun. You know, I had a lot of people when Zach was like on the rise or like freaking out that he's getting so much attention. And I'm like, we're doing that on purpose.
What yeah, are you talking this about? Is like, great for everyone.
And I don't know, I can't figure out why people have a different mindset. I just know that
that's not yours. Yeah.
Mine. And that people that are doing well, they need to be supported and wings. Parker's a really good example. Parker's one of the best people at the door for yeah. nightlife in the history.
Yeah.
I don't know how many, like at the end of the day.
I could never do what he does. I
mean, 100%.
You as well, because we're too nice, one.
100%.
You know,
however, Parker's actual secret strength was and is creative and marketing. Yeah. And we all made it a point that he segues from being that into being that, and he runs
yeah.
H-Wood's creative, and he you know is a partner of H-Wood. He's like a part of the success, and everything that we've done in the last 5 years essentially is all his. He's the one creating those logos, those menus and stuff,
and he loves it,
and we have really helped champion that. So it's like one example of many. And the more we do that, the more I think everyone kind of wins.
Yeah.
And then as far as spotting talent, I think it's a matter of just watching and listening.
Yeah.
I always say like I'm kind of the ultimate like observer.
Yeah.
And anthropologist. And the best part about it is most people don't think I am.
Right.
Like they don't think I'm paying attention to what I'm paying attention to.
Oh no, you always do like if you're like. Well, mostly you're on your phone because you're juggling a million
yeah.
things. But we can be in conversation and then you'll pop up and be like, yeah. have an insight on
yeah.
onto it. And I'm like, always listening.
Yeah, yeah, I'm always listening. I'm usually watching. I usually do a lot of things where even in our own venues, I purposely don't tell anyone when I'm going somewhere. And I just want to see what people are doing. Not necessarily, I'm not checking up on staff and stuff. I want to see who's doing what. And
yeah.
I want to see who's there and who's around. And I actually read something on, you know, Clive Davis does, even to this day, a similar, and I have no relation, so who knows, but was a similar thing of like, he'll even send people out as eyes, but he wants to like just observe what people are listening to and like watching and stuff. And that was something I learned early on, even with music and film and stuff, is I'm like, I'm watching what people are gravitating towards
yeah.
so that I know what can and should work.
Yeah.
So that's what I do with people, especially people that are with us.
Should we talk about the X team?
X team is a good example.
Yeah.
X team is a really good example.
I think it's so special. I was when we were talking about today, I was telling Michaela, the producer, I was like, you know, there is something so special about what John does and how, you know, you curate this group. But not only that, then time comes and we all kind of separate a bit. We're all doing our own things. Maybe Zach is DJing here, I'm over here. And you know, we are a family, but it was a little bit spread out in this moment. And then you said, let's do X Team, which made us a superpower in a sense. Yep. And one keeps us together. You know, we have to meet in a room every week and go over kind of how special clients were handled that week, or, you know, it's the top notch of hospitality.
Yep.
And we are all in communications and helping each other out. I've got someone I'm sending, but I'm way across town. We got you.
An X Team is super special to me because I actually have this like vision for it really growing. I want to have like a USC hospitality like school, and the X Team is like actual like part of hospitality, meaning like whatever other restaurant group is out there, they start hiring an X Team, you know, like to me, that's like a cool growth thing. But basically what it kind of stemmed from is the fact that we, in my opinion, for restaurants, nightclubs, hotels, whatever it might be, it's kind of a given. It's like the kicker on a football team. They're expected to make the kick. No one really praises them. I know you love sports analogies, but they're expected to make the kick. If they make it, no one cares. If they miss it, like, it's disastrous, right?
Right.
For the restaurant, let's just call it restaurant, nightclub world, like, you're expected to have good food. You're expected to have good service. You're expected to have the place look cool. You're expected to be full, right? All those are givens. They're all hard. They're very hard to do. So even that is an uphill battle. But given the competition, the landscape, you got a lot of competition out there. Separating factor, I think that I have personally done, and we all as a group have done, but was this X factor, which is what I call it, which is a lot of things that are outside the four walls of a venue, meaning like you're anywhere from, you know, handling getting a rental house for someone, or a birthday cake special that's special done, or a special present,
right?
Or a pig with a top hat, or whatever it might be. And so for me, it was identifying people, because it's something that I think you can't be fully taught. You have to be inherent.
Totally.
And I think there's a lot of kids out there, or people, shouldn't even just say kids, that are like me, that like, I wasn't good at math.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be Warhol. I was good at art. I wasn't, you know, not going to go on in anything in sports or medicine or whatever, but really good with people. Love people, actually love people.
Yeah.
Why is there not something for that? What do you have to be? You have to go be a salesman?
Right.
That's literally what you would think you have to be. Or people go into agent training programs at agencies. No offense to agencies. The training program is awful. You're pushing a mail cart around. You're not actually dealing with people. And so X Team derived of, hey, there's actually this division of hospitality that is handholding important clients, not that all the guests are important, but like our regulars or someone in town or whatever it might be.
And you're right. It's not, this isn't just for celebrities. Like, this
not
is
at
for
all.
Like lifelong.
It's very few celebrities, actually.
Supporters that we've had that we consider family, and we want them to feel that just as much as when we walk in the door, we want them to have the same treatment.
Yeah. So the X Teams, you know, stem from that. And really, if I'm actually like, what it really came from was originally what happened and how Zach really kind of came into his growth and what he's doing was, as I was getting older and I was going to have a baby, with my wife being like, you cannot be out till 4 a.m. every night. Not that I'm doing anything, but I'm handling clients.
Right.
And I was like, you know, it's true. It's not sustainable. So it's like I took, you know, so Zach, one of the only people I trusted and people and could get along. And I noticed how he was with people.
Great.
And basically his entire job, probably for 2 years, honestly, like it was a long time, where about a year and a half, not because I trained him. It was just me and him in this regard.
I remember
I was
that.
Like, hey, the minute you can be there with me early, but like 2 a.m. hits, you're not leaving that person's side, whoever is in the place or whatever it might be. So he started earlier. He would just be with me at all times. And then his whole thing was whenever the last guest, wherever they were, he would text me all is good, you know, the report, whatever it might be. And it did wonders for us, for H-Wood, because it allowed me to actually have some sort of personal life and allow the business to not suffer.
Right.
And allowed our guests and our clients to be happy. And so that is where, you know, Zach was really doing. And then he started DJing for them. And then he, you know, really had, you know, his inherent traits took off. But that's like how that all happened. And so for X Team, really identifying people that have that skill set and then kind of training it. And so, you know, we have a team of 8, 9 right now.
Yeah.
You know, Yanta, shout out Yanta.
Yanta.
Marsha, you know, people that are like amazing with people.
It can be taught, but it takes a certain type of person.
Right.
To handle different personalities and not break because, you know, we've often gone through the kind of trials of hiring friends that want, you know, favors. I remember I had a girlfriend that wanted to be a bottle service girl.
Yeah.
You really have to like be like, can you handle that? Sure. What's the big deal?
Yeah, they think it's just pouring a drink.
But no, it's dealing with all of these different types of personalities in such a way where you're not going home crying, you know, in a sense. You're not taking everything personally. And, you know, she left hours after being hired.
Four hours.
Yeah. She was like, I'm done. Never want to see a nightclub again.
That was a fast one.
You know, yeah. So it takes a particular type of person to work in this industry. And I really saw that when we opened up Bootsy Bellows Aspen.
Yeah.
And it was hard for us to get people, hire people. So I know at one point we had this major buyer come in, a big client of ours. And so we flew in our girls.
Yep.
And to me, once I'm friends with these girls, I see them all the time, help each other out here and there throughout the night. But I never really saw the brilliance of what they do and how they handle clients until we were set in that circumstance and dealing with waitresses that weren't
had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah. And then I watched these like Glamazon girls come in and like, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want?
Yep.
Bam, 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 bam. Drinks. And like really moving the night along. And it takes a certain kind of finesse, I think.
Yep.
And so finding that is kind of special. And along with that, I mean, I think that particular weekend we had that buyer tip something insane, which is kind of like the plus of being in nightlife, not only this type of thing, but just like, you never know what's going to happen.
You never know.
And this guy tipped like, what was it?
I think a couple hundred grand.
A couple hundred grand.
500 grand maybe.
Next day, everyone was talking about it and everyone wanted a job.
Yeah.
I think I applied for
it. Well, that's actually a good, that's always my motto is I never do anything for money.
Right.
That's the thing. I don't know if it's a good way to live or not, but it's my whole thing is as money follows a quality product or person or thing. Right. So, you know, to me, it's like you do a great job and you do your thing well, money will follow. It might not be today, but it'll come.
And I think that's why people stick with you because they know that it's not going to be blindsided by some big money deal where everyone gets knocked away and there's one person standing kind of thing. That's never been H-Wood. It's kind of always been a family thing. And, you know, like in the very beginning of not going to that bribery kind of sense where you're just like, I would rather fold than give them a dime. And that takes a lot of heart. And I think a very special person to do that. And I really commend you on that because I admire it.
I appreciate that.
No end. Going along the lines of you finding special people that you believe in and see maybe a creative side or however you see things and however you do things, I'm sure there's been like when, for instance, when we first became partners, I was not your typical kind of partner.
Yep.
In a sense. And, you know, and ever since I became transgender, I mean, for me, once again, the lining and bottle comes from the level of support and family that I, you know, chosen family. And I know that there's nothing that I can do where I would feel judged from anyone in our company, but only love and support. But I'm sure that can't be the same for everyone. You know, have you ever gotten questioned how or who did you come about Marsha?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do people talk about it? And is it something that
you know, have? I think over the years, I am so quick to be like, when at the time is Marcus is part of me, part of us, like all of it. I don't think I've ever, never experienced anything negative. I think when you were transitioning, I guess it would say, a lot of questions of, do I do all that?
Which is special.
Yeah, and so why I think it's so important what you're doing is I try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I really try to say, you know, people are inherently good.
Right.
They just maybe are uneducated, don't know, whatever it might be. And so for me, that's always been my thing of like, Marsha is Marsha. Like this is now Marsha. That's why my number one thing, some people, not anymore now, but originally would text Marcus. Right. And I wouldn't correct them. And now if someone ever does that, they're corrected to Marsha.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, I don't know who.
I mean, it honestly took me a while to do that as well as I get used to my own transition and feeling safe enough and comfortable to do that. You know, and I'll really say, you know, we have such an amazing HR person. You know, when I remember leaving Hood one day and Christina comes across the elevator right when the doors are closing and she's like, I just want to know your pronouns, is it she, her, him? And the doors are closing, I'm like, it's whatever girl. Then I sat in the elevator and I was like, it felt so good to be asked, you know, to be seen one as like, maybe I should ask.
But I also think educating people of that, because most don't know and I'm okay
with teaching, and people sometimes will say, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I just called you Marcus. Or I'll as people are talking, I'll say Marsha.
Yeah.
And they'll continue their story. Sometimes they'll correct themselves and sometimes not. But sometimes, you know, when people are like, I'm sorry, I go, no, the fact that you are trying it means the world to me. You know, if you try, then it's fine. If you're just going to be like a dick about it and be like, nope, you're Marcus to me and that's who you're always gonna be.
Yeah.
Then we've got nothing else to say.
Yeah.
You know, in that respect.
I also think there's a testament to you as a person, business person, like friend. I think it comes down to everyone just loves you. Even, you know, it's like, and honestly, like if my theory is if there's any like weird feedback or anyone that does all that, we don't want them anyway in our life. So
we don't deal with that.
You know, but if anyone is like even somewhat confused or whatever it may be, I think what's meaning like they don't understand, or I try to give the benefit of the doubt for a second, be educated and let them do in that regard.
Or even meet me and know.
Meet you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's an important aspect, you know? And I think it's important to remember that. You know, I'm fortunate enough I'm so close to you, and so many friends of mine are close. So I think that's a kind of, I try to remember that a lot of people maybe haven't grown up with that.
1,000%.
And I do try to remember that. So I think it's important to, then it's on them to have that. If they can't be open-minded, which I have to say, knock on wood, I have fortunately no one around me personally that is not open, not good about
everything. Right.
I haven't had any like weird negative thing, but I'm sure you have to deal with that.
Like, I don't
take that lightly.
No, and it happens, but you know what also lately, which has been such a great surprise, that people have reached out to me privately and said, you know, when I first moved here, I come from like, you know,
wherever they come from,
they're like, it just wasn't in their life whatsoever. They didn't know anyone. They never heard about it. And they said, but getting to know you and watching you walk through a room and being confident, it's changed me. You are my friend forever. And if anyone ever spoke against you, I'm never asked anyone, don't get in fights for me or anything like that.
But
reach out, this has been randomly, like someone just randomly texted me and then you know, a couple days later, someone else randomly texted me. And I think it's so beautiful because, you know, all that it is like what we're doing here. We're sharing stories and human experiences. Someone may have an idea about me when I walk through the door, but that will change once you get to know me.
100%.
You know, I think that's so important.
I think people need to learn that.
Yeah. I think we're here to teach them. Let's also talk about some funny things, like what kind of like special requests. I know some stories, but like special requests from clients that are just like out of this world, but we get them done. Just to make them happy.
The pig with the top hat really topped it at midnight.
Right.
Yeah.
Because his finding client a farm wanted, open.
Yeah.
Wanted something for his girlfriend.
Wanted to gift a pig or a chicken in a top hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I remember you having to find a watch. I remember lots of times you text me like, where can I get this watch?
Yeah.
Where are these like vintage lighters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like always something.
Yeah. It's always something. But at the end of the day, that's how we kind of separate ourselves.
Totally. Because we'll do it. You know, we'll find.
You know, I read that's how Nordstrom's motto was and how they built was, someone came in. There's a famous story. Someone came in and asked to return a tire and they did it. A tire. They don't sell tires at Nordstrom's.
Like, sure.
And so I've always had that stuck with me for us where it's like at the end of the day, you know, anything legal, we
can get it done.
We get it done. We get it done.
Yeah. I think that's why we have such an amazing Rolodex of supporters because they know that, you know, they know that we'll go that extra degree to make them one feel comfortable, which is why I also love our no camera rule in our restaurants. Yep. I think that's so special because in this time where everything is being recorded and every move, people are so, you know, cautious of every movement that they make.
Right.
And everything that they do, that to have a place where, you know, I can just relax, there's no photos here. I think it really makes it special.
It does.
And something that you saw a long time ago.
Yeah, it does.
Right when the phone thing started.
I think we're the only place in Las Vegas that does no photos.
Yeah.
And they thought we were crazy for trying to do that. And now everyone's on board because it just makes everyone kind of more at peace.
Right.
You know, and it's hard to enforce. People really sneak those photos.
Yeah.
I mean, we see them out there.
Yeah. I mean, well, then they, you know, or someone has a phone up, but, you know, we kind of regulate that. And I think it makes for a special place because then people feel comfortable to get up and dance or just be free.
You 100%.
Know, because it's so, I don't think, you know, even with Instagram, I don't think you're as free.
Right.
Even, you know, posting a photo, you know, all the things, you kind of like display this certain lifestyle. But to be with friends and eating and having a drink and good music, I think that creating a place for them to feel safe enough to not think about, am I being watched right now? And I think we've done that really well. And
yeah,
it's a great space. Any other things you can remember like being requested to do or find?
I'm trying to think what I can say that I've requested to do. Yeah, I'm trying to think what I could say.
Well, we often have like people show up, you know, at the door and we're like maybe not as prepared because we're maybe a busy night or something like that.
We had a client recently that wanted to take over Virgin's new cruise line. You know, Richard Branson's cruise line. So I texted the president and I said, I don't know why.
Can I have it?
No, I said, hey, I said, can I get Branson's cruise line tonight? He said, did you really just ask me that? I'm like, well, I have to throw an event for our client. He's like, this is the most insane request I've ever gotten. I was like, can we figure it out though? And
how
so that's basically, that's basically, you know, what the type of level that we do. So every day there's something different, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the special part about this.
But I actually kind of like that. It's fun.
Yeah, because it's not the, I mean, I could never see either of us working in an office sense with cubicles and your day is one thing every single day. You clock out at 5.
Right.
I mean, for some people that honestly does work. I've had like, you know, my own sister, for example, I'm like, my older sister, I'm like, don't you want to travel and see? Nope, I like my life exactly the way it is. I love my Starbucks, I love this. And you know, I took a moment and sat with that when she said that. I said, yes, she does love that. And that's for her.
Yep.
I think for our personalities, we need a day-to-day change.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of what keeps us going.
Drives me.
Drives us, yeah. So this umbrella of things we have going on, from restaurants to movies to nightlife to production. I know we've talked about this, and I've actually dreamt about this, and I think I told you before. Hotels,
right? Yeah.
Is this the next dream for us?
I think it's always been the dream. Own our own hotel, create and build our own hotel. So that's, I would say that's a big next. If it never happens, I'll probably be really upset. No. If it never happens, I think it's okay. But that has always been what we're building towards.
Yeah. I think it's coming soon. I don't think anything's impossible for this group. Seeing what it's come down to. I mean, definitely a phoenix rising, because we were scorched.
100%.
You know, and I think now we have, because of the scorching, that kind of fell to the wayside, and we have these beautiful colors of people, different people coming together and creating everyone's next good time.
Yep.
You know, when people outright me sometimes, they're like, what are you doing? I'm all planning your next good time.
Yeah, that's a good
like,
one.
You know, because that's what we do. And we kind of create these special places and experiences for people.
Yeah.
And there's plenty more to come.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining, Marsha.
Thank you.
I believe you saw the vision in the beginning, and here we are today.
I love it.
And I'm so thankful
that you're
my guest today, and hopefully soon you'll be my co-host.
There you go.
Let's do this.
I'm in.
Touch.
This podcast is brought to you by Vocal Podcast Network. Executive producers are Michaela Simon and Marsha Molinari. Produced by Yonta Taiwo, Morgan McDonald, and Ariana Giles. Shooting and editing by Morgan McDonald. Music by Aaron Rees. Artwork by Dominic Demetz, and hosted by Marsha Molinari. Remember to follow at Marsha Molinari and at Vocal Podcasts everywhere. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast.